today before we start. There we go. All right. Let's open our Bibles to Hebrews chapter 13. Make very few comments in the way of review today. We'll get right into our lesson here shortly. But chapter 13 begins the summary or the ending or the conclusion of this great book. Chapters 1 through 12, we've had a journey which we talked about doctrinal matters, and then we talked about warnings or exhortations. Remember, there are five sections, and each section had a doctrinal discussion and then an encouragement or a warning section. Doctrinal and then exhortation, doctrinal exhortation all the way through. That kind of concludes at the end of chapter 12. And then chapter 13 here begins a series of just final appeals or final thoughts, if you will. I think you'll really enjoy this. As much as I've enjoyed chapters 1 through 12, sometimes those were pretty deep doctrinal discussions. For example, do you remember back in the middle of the book when we spent several weeks talking about the priesthood of Melchizedek? You know, those kind of things can get pretty deep. As a matter of fact, the Hebrew writer himself said that he wanted to share some things about that discussion, Melchizedek, and he said, but I can't share it with you because you're not mature enough. See, you've got to grow in the faith before you can even have those kind of discussions. So we've had some interesting doctrinal discussions through this. In general, though, what is the theme? What's the flavor of the book? There are Christians who come out of Judaism, out of a Jewish background, and they're facing persecution, and they're being encouraged by their Jewish friends to come back to Judaism, to turn their back, as it were, on the Lord, to turn their back on Christianity and come back to the law of Moses. That generally sums up the entire book. So all of those doctrinal discussions we've had kind of, you know, centered around that. Now we come to chapter 13, and we enter into this last section here, which is just a hodgepodge of last-minute appeals. Now, I will say this. There's going to be another doctrinal issue here. We're not completely void of those doctrinal discussions in chapter 13. For example, if you look at verse 12, a reference is made to Christ's suffering outside the gate. And then in verse 13, it says, let us go forth to him outside the camp. That's an interesting doctrinal issue there at play. And we'll talk about that when we get to it, either today or perhaps it'll be next week before we get to that section. But I hope you've enjoyed our study here, but I really think you'll profit and enjoy from the conversation and discussion we have here in chapter 13. In verses 1 through 17 here, there's just a whole bunch of different kind of just last-minute appeals, if you will. And I've put this on the PowerPoint here. Well, I forgot to share with you this idea. Let me share this before I get to that. In every chapter of Hebrews here, I've shared with you how that each chapter is Christ-centered. And so we've named each chapter, I think, with something to do about Christ. In chapter 13, we're calling this one, Christ is our eternal King. And that comes from verse 8. If you look at that, Jesus is the same yesterday, today, and forever. And as I said, it's basically some final appeals and conclusions. And then Jesus, being Jesus-centered, you can look at these verses. In verse 6, he is my helper. In verse 8, he is unchanging. In verse 15, it's by him and through him that we worship this morning. And so we'll discuss those as we come to them. And then as a final note here in verse 22, remember I've told you all along, even back when we first started Hebrews, that Hebrews is really a book of encouragement. It's really a book of exhortations. And verse 22, one of the last things that's said here in the closing verses of this book, bears that out when he says, I appeal to you, brethren, bear with the word of exhortation, for I've written to you in few words. So when they're suffering persecution, whatever lot that we have in life and whatever we're suffering in life, Hebrews is a good study, and it's meant to encourage us, mainly to stay faithful. Don't turn your back on the Lord. There's no other way for salvation. Jesus says, I'm the way, the truth, the life. No one comes to the Father but by me. Don't turn your back on the only way. And that's the encouragement to us as it was to those Hebrew recipients there. All right, now having said that, I'm going to put something on the board now, and it's a lot of writing. So if you're taking notes, don't try to write all this down now, because we're going to go back and kind of visit them as we come. But I told you that it's a hodgepodge of last-minute appeals. Verses 1 through 17 has at least 13. That's what I count. It has 13 different things that's addressed. And I've even summed them up over here in the right-hand column by one word. When I got all this done, I got to thinking, I thought, you know, there's 13 weeks in a quarter. And I thought, you know what? This would make for a great quarterly study. We could do it, or we could write our own study for 13 weeks in Hebrews 13. You know, it's amazing at the different last-minute appeals that he makes through here. Love each other. Be hospitable. Remember the imprisoned and mistreated. If you want to look at just the one words over here, look. We talk about love, hospitality. We talk about compassion and marriage and money and trust and mentors and truth and doctrine and Christianity and worship and conduct and submissive. How in the world do you cover all of those things in 17 verses? But he does. That's the reason I'm saying it's just kind of a hodgepodge of last-minute things here that the writer is telling them after we've gone through all of this doctrinal discussion here. So, having said that, let's go look at some of them. And we're going to talk about these very briefly. As I said, it would make a really good quarterly study. We could take every one of these and spend a week on every one. Not going to do that. We're going to stay in the context of our overall study and discussion of this book of Hebrews. But let's talk about them a little bit. And I want to ask you a question. If I asked you, in fact, I am asking you, to sum up this book right here, sum it up in one word. Sum it up in one word.
Truth.
That'd be a good word. Truth. Oh, that's a good word. Not the one I'm looking for.
Love.
Now, I want us to talk about that just a little bit here. Love. If you had to sum up the Bible in one word, love. Truth is a great word. You know, there are other words, but I think we have some biblical backing to say it's love. Now, why do I say that? Well, let's look at some verses here. Paul said to the Galatians in Galatians 5:14, "For all of the law is fulfilled in one word." That's what I asked. It's fulfilled in one word, even in this: "You shall love your neighbor as yourself." There it is. Sum it up. Everything in one word: love. Well, here's another one. In Colossians, to the Colossians, he wrote, in chapter 3, he wrote these things. He said, put on all these things. Now, remember we said the Greek term for put on is like you put on a coat. All right, put on these things. Well, he gives you a laundry list. He says, put on love. He says, put on humility. Put on meekness. And forgive one another as Christ has forgiven you. But then verse 14 is the key. But he says, but above all these things, put on what? Put on love. Here's another one. Matthew chapter 22. Jesus was asked by those skeptics and those trying to trick him, trying to set him up. He was asked one time, so what is the greatest commandment of all time? Well, now what was behind that is that actually, if you go and count up all the do's and don'ts in the old law, I'm told there are a total of 613. 613 laws of do this, don't do this, do this, don't do this. And there was all kind of discussion among the religious leaders all the time about which one of them's most important. And so they thought that if they asked Jesus to answer that, that he would give an answer that would immediately cause problems, and there'd be some bickering back and forth as to, what he said. But you're familiar with that in Matthew chapter 22, when they asked him, what is the greatest of all commandments? And he said, the greatest is what? Love God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind. Love God. And he said, this is the greatest of all commandments. And the second is likened to it. What did he say? Love your neighbor as yourself. So what did he center it on? Love. Okay? The greatest of these is love. 1 Corinthians 13 is the love chapter. And it begins by saying love or charity. Love never fails or never ceases. But then at the end of it, he says, now there's faith, hope, and love. But the greatest of these is love. And then lastly here, in 1 John chapter 4, we read a couple of comments. I think it's down in verse 7 and 8. Let us love one another, for God is love. And then the next verse, for love is of God, rather. And then the next verse says, for God is love. So, okay, I asked for, how would you sum up the entire Bible in one word? Love, here's the backing for that. Love. And that's what we begin chapter 13 with here. We begin it with this word. It's interesting that it begins with this word love. If you were to look up, and I started for us to do this today on the internet, but we'll just do it on the board here. Chapter 13 begins with, let brotherly love continue. If you looked up the phrase brotherly love in the Greek, let me show you what word. This is the Greek word transposed into English. But here's the word that translates brotherly love. I kid you not. That's the word right there. Now, we often say that phileo, the Greek word phileo, is a type love that we refer to as brotherly love, and we say that that's where the city of Philadelphia gets its name, as the city of brotherly love. But here's even, it goes even further here. This is the word itself, Philadelphia. Now, there's two words that make up this. One of them is the word philos. And the other word is this. This is the two Greek words here that make up the word Philadelphia. It's philos and it's adelphos. Well, philos here is really this word, friend. And adelphos over here is this word. Okay? Okay, you might be thinking, wait a minute, where does love come in there? Philos here comes from a Greek, this is really the noun word where the verb word is this. Phileo. Phileo is the verb word for philos here, which is friend, a love that we have for friends. And when you put the adelphos with it, brother here, that's where we get the brotherly love. Brotherly love. That's the love I have for all of you. You are my brothers. We're brothers, you see. Well, how so? Because I'm assuming here, we're brothers if, let me put it that way, we have submitted to the new birth. Remember the discussion that Jesus had with Nicodemus? And he said, unless you be born again. And Nicodemus didn't understand, how is that possible? And Jesus says, no, you've got to be born by the water and the Spirit. Well, the Spirit's got to be involved in it, but the water part of it that's involved in it is baptism. And if we have submitted to those things, that's the new birth, then we've all gone through that. And secondly, We share the same Father. That's the reason I can call you brothers and sisters. We are brothers and sisters in that we have both submitted to that new birth and we share the same Father. So we can share then this brotherly love. So I just thought that was very interesting here. And I put this up here because it's also going to tie into something we see here in verse 2. But let's talk about verse 1 first. Brotherly love. All right, what does verse 1 tell us? It tells us that love is to be sustained. What does it say? Let brotherly love continue. So we sustain that. We work on that. Now, you know from your physical brothers and sisters, do you ever have issues in the family? You bet you do. You know, that's just human nature. You get at one another, but you love them. And then unfortunately, sometimes we get at one another in the church family as well. I hope we do it in such a way, though, that doesn't overcome our love or supersede our love for one another. We have disagreements. We have disagreements sometimes. Some people like one another better than you do others. You know, I came to that realization a long time ago that not everybody likes me. You know, I have a scratchy personality. I understand that. Been working on it as I get older, but I still love you, and I hope you do, you know, the same. But let brotherly love continue. Now, here's another thing I want to point out here as we continue in verse 2. These first few verses here really are all centered about love. We're starting with brotherly love, then we're going to talk about love to strangers, then we're going to talk about love to those who are in prison. Then we're going to talk about love within the marriage relationship, love, see, all of that. And then we're going to conclude by looking at it from a negative perspective. Verse 5 here, we'll talk about don't love money. There's some things you don't want to love. Let's love one another. Let's love strangers. Let's love prisoners. Let's love within the marriage relationship at home. Let's don't love money. But it's all centered around that word that we started with. The idea of love. So let's go to verse 2. Verse 2 says, remember the prisoners as if chained with them, those who are mistreated, since you yourselves are in the body also.
That's not my verse 2.
Pardon?
That's verse 3, it's not in verse 2.
Thank you very much. Let's go back to verse 2. Let's go back to verse 2. I'm sorry, you're exactly right. I don't want to leave verse 2 off. Let's do it again. Verse 2. Do not forget to entertain strangers, for by so doing, some have unwittingly entertained angels. Do not forget to entertain strangers. Does anybody have a different version?
Show hospitality.
Hospitality. Okay. So the word here that I'm looking for is the word hospitality. But I want to go to the Greek word first. The phrase to entertain strangers is actually this word. Watch it now. You see that? We've been talking about that, haven't we? If you looked up the Greek word for to entertain strangers, philoxenia. Philoxenia. Well, you clearly see what? This word, philos, which is friend, which is related to phileo, love of friends, brotherly love, philok. What does xenia mean here? The word xenia in the Greek is this. Now, how about that? So you've got phila, friend, xenia, stranger, so treat strangers as though they're your friends. Isn't that interesting? See, again, it's all centered back to the idea of love. Not agapeo, not agape love, but brotherly love, phileo. That's the love that we're really talking about here. So it says, do not forget to entertain strangers. Now, if you looked up this word here in the dictionary, you would find two definitions. Number one is love to strangers. love to strangers. And number two is hospitality. And that's the reason a lot of the newer versions render that some way. Do not forget to entertain strangers, or do not forget to show hospitality, or something like that. So hospitality, do not forget to show hospitality. To whom?
Strangers.
How do we do that? How do we improve in that area?
I can tell you one.
All right.
Let's hear it. I didn't really think about them today. We stopped at the Mapco gas station. They walked by our house, and I got out of the truck, and all of a sudden, a tall person was standing next to me. He had a Cadillac, a Ford LCD. Crown Victoria, like my dad used to. He said he was trying to get back to Fayette or Jasper, somewhere up there. He didn't have any money, that they had stolen his car, and the police had called him down there for that. Big, long 15, 20 minute story. I don't know what it was. But I said, well, what do you need? He goes, I just need gas. So I put in $25 worth of gas for him.
Yeah.
I said, that about fills you up. That'll get you there. And so Terry said, why'd you do that? The accountant in her. And I said, well, you never know.
I love Terry.
I said, you never know. That could have been an angel of God. First word I don't know.
Well, that's interesting that you share that, because that's exactly what first.
That, not saying that.
I know. Yeah. I know. Sure.
I would want her to do that, but I understand.
Well, we walked out of the back of the church building several years ago. Same thing happened. There's some guy comes up, and this other church member, this lady was walking beside me, and he said, I need some money for gas, you know. I got to get so-and-so. I need some money for gas. And she was digging in her purse. I said, wait. So I told him, I said, you follow me up here to the gas station. I'll put you some gas in the car. Mm-hmm. We talked about it later, and she said, you know, that was a good idea. And I said, well, don't give cash. You know, you can help somebody sometimes without without giving them cash. So that, very good comment. Verse 2, very, very good comment. Let's go on to verse 3. I wanted to get there earlier, so let's see what verse 3 says. Remember the prisoners, particularly those who were prisoners for Christ. Thinking back over the tone of the entire book of Hebrews, and how so many brethren were being persecuted and put in prison. And so here we have this final exhortation. Remember the prisoners as if chained with them. Those who are mistreated. So not only the prisoners, but those who are mistreated. And I think the word that I used initially up here was compassion. So again, we're talking in the context of love here. So we love brothers, we love strangers, we love prisoners, and those who are being mistreated, we have compassion on them. These are final exhortations that's being made. The church in my old hometown of Double Springs has something that I think is really a good thing they do. I keep up with them through their bulletin that they send to me, and they have a jail ministry. So that I think it's once a month, or it might be more than often than that. I don't remember how often I see it. But regularly, after the morning worship on Sunday, they'll meet at 2 o'clock at the jail for a jail service. Several of the guys there conduct that jail service. And that's one way of meeting the need spiritually, which is the most important need, of the prisoners. And so things that we ought to think about. How do we do that? How do we minister? How do we minister to those who are in prison? So just things that we need to be give thought to. One more thing before I leave before we go to verse 4. Remember the prisoners as if chained with them, those who are mistreated, since you yourselves are in the body also. There's two ways you could think of that. Number one, as long as I'm breathing and as long as I'm on this side of eternity, I'm in the body. And as long as I'm in the body here and alive, I'm subject to being imprisoned and mistreated and persecuted and jailed myself, you know, especially for the cause of Christ. So there's one way of thinking, the Hebrew writer could say, remember these folks who are in jail, those who are being mistreated, considering yourself, since you're in the body also. But how's another way you could think of that in the body?
The church.
What?
Church.
The body of Christ. You see, yeah, I'm still physically alive and still in my earthly tabernacle, the body. But I'm also a part of the body, which is the body of Christ. And that exhortation would be very meaningful as well. Remember the prisoners as if chained with them, those who are mistreated, since you're in the body of Christ. I think that would be okay as well, since you're in the body also. So two different ways there to note that. All right, love. Love of brothers, love of strangers, love of those in prison. And then we come to this other kind of love here in verse 4. See, these all just seemingly are completely hodgepodge, just totally unrelated things. Let brotherly love continue. Verse 2 says, don't forget to entertain strangers. Verse 3 says, remember the prisoners. And verse 4 says, marriage is honorable. See, those seemingly on the surface are not really all that connected. They're just a hodgepodge of last-minute appeals. But they really are connected. They're connected with what? Love. They're connected with love. Love each other. I love you. I'm not just giving word of mouth. I love you all. But we're also encouraged to love those strangers, those people who need our help from time to time. Love those who are in jail. And then we come to verse 4. Let's read it. Marriage is honorable among all, and the bed undefiled. But fornicators and adulterers God will judge. So verse 4, we talk about the love between a husband and wife. Not necessarily phileo, but we're still talking about the love between husband and wife. Now evidently there was probably some immorality in existence in the Hebrews, among the Hebrews there. I'm reading between the lines a little bit, taking a little liberty there, but there was some reason why they threw this thing in there about adultery and fornication. So the Spirit reminds them, inspiration reminds them that marriage is a divine institution. It was set up by whom? God. It was governed by whom? God. Laws put into effect governing the marriage relationship by our Creator. So that's the reminder here. So now, man may come along and pervert that. And oh, the society that we live in, how that's happened. You know, we see it all the time now about marriages between men and men. And I say that knowing that that's impossible, man and man and woman and so perversions is what I'm saying. Man has perverted this, but God instituted it. God set the original rules for it, and we've talked about that before. But two things are listed here in particular how that marriage can be perverted: fornication and adultery. What do those terms mean? Fornication is a general term referring to any kind of illicit sexual activity. It doesn't have anything to do with the marriage bonds. It's just illicit sexual activity in general, fornication. Porneia is the Greek word. And then the term adultery becomes a little more specific. Now we're talking about in the marriage relationship. And that's unauthorized sex between people who are in a marriage relationship with someone else. You know what that is. So the text here tells us very specifically, God will judge. Marriage is honorable among all, the bed undefiled, but fornicators and adulterers, God will judge. The impenitent. Folks, fornication and adultery is not the unpardonable sin. It's not the unpardonable sin. It's unpardonable only if the people refuse to what? Repent. So that's the reason I say God will judge the impenitent, because 1 Corinthians 6, 9 through 11 is a great text here to cross-reference. And in there, in the list, in this laundry list of sins, Paul says to the Corinthians where there was rampant abuse of these issues, these sexual problems. But he says neither fornicators nor adulterers, specifically lists the two that we talked about here, neither fornicators nor adulterers, and a list of all the others, but he says neither fornicators nor adulterers will inherit the kingdom. And then it goes on to say, and such, what's the word? Were some of you. Now, what's the important thing about the word were? It's past tense. See, fornicators and adulterers, God will judge. Fornicators, neither fornicators nor adulterers, will inherit the kingdom of God, and such were some of you. Those brethren in Corinth had been guilty of such, but they had repented, and they had stopped that, and in so doing, they could be forgiven, and then they can be accepted by God. So, the marriage relationship, we could spend a long time talking about that. Now, verse 5, I want to conclude our verses here that has to do with love by looking at one from the negative sense. Now, verse 5 in the New King James Version reads like this, and then I'm going to ask you for somebody to read me an ESV or maybe a newer version. The New King James says, "Let your conduct be without covetousness. Be content with such things as you have." All right, who's got an ESV?
Keep your life free from love of money.
There, that's what I want right there. Stop there.
All
right, be content with what you have. Okay, here's the important point. Keep your life free from the what?
The love.
What are we talking about? Love. Here we are in a negative sense. Now, we listed a bunch of things that you need to nurture love, but there are some things you need to beware of. From a negative sense, it says, keep your life free from the love of money. This is one of the verses that when we are asked to do these financial seminars from time to time, we go into different congregations and we present what the Bible has to say about money. And part of it is this love, this idea that we're dealing with here. Keep your life free from the love of money. All right, now, test time, okay? All right, everybody on your toes. 1 Timothy 6, 10. For money is the root of all evil.
Love.
Right or wrong?
Love.
No, that's not right. The Bible doesn't say money is the root of all evil. It says what? The love of money. See, that's what we're dealing with here. Love of money is the root of all evil. And 1 Timothy 6 is a wonderful chapter about that. You get over in later on and it says, charge them who are rich that they be not high-minded and trust in themselves, but in the living God. Well, how does that verse start? Verse 17, charge them who are rich. It doesn't say condemn them who are rich. No, there's nothing wrong with being rich. It all has to do with the love of money. And guess what? You can be guilty of that and be just as poor as he, Hank. You can not have a cent to your name, but you can still be driven by the love of money and be condemned because of your attitude. That's what we're talking about here in this one. So these five love lessons, they're wonderful love lessons here that we've started with. Verse 5 we could spend a lot of time with, and maybe we will one day when we talk about keep your life free from the love of money, or my version says let your conduct, your way of life, your conduct be without covetousness. Be careful that you don't get caught up in that keeping up with your neighbor type thing materialistically. And then it says, be content with such things as you have. And then watch how it ends here. It says, for he himself has said, I will never leave you nor forsake you. Back to Matthew chapter 6, verse 24, says, you cannot serve God and mammon. That's a Greek term that really means possessions and earnings and all material things. It makes it clear, you can't serve both. Well, here it says, keep your life free from the love of those material things. In other words, don't be caught on that side of the ledger. Keep your life centered on the Lord. And remember, I will never leave you nor forsake you. So we're going to start here to kind of change gears a little bit. The first five or so of these last-minute appeals, if you will, have been stuff that would be social. You know, he's talking to you as a person. Not that there's not religious overtones in it, but socially, love your brothers. Love each other. Love strangers. Love those who are imprisoned and misfortuned. Those who are down on their luck. Love those people. Love within the marriage relationship. Realizing that's a God-established institution. And be careful with that and protect that. And I know I'm speaking to older people here, but oh, how our young people need to hear that message. Be careful with that. And then as a final warning here, love these things, but there's some things you don't want to love. Don't get caught up with the love of money. Now, having said that, we'll turn our attention in the latter part here, verse 6 through 17, to things that are more spiritual in nature. Now, we're about out of time here, but I'll go ahead and introduce this first one. Verse 6 says, so that we may boldly say, the Lord is my helper, I will not fear, what can man do to me? That's the quote from Psalms that we had on the PowerPoint when you came in today. And then, let's talk about that one for just a moment here. Let me see if I can catch up with myself. I hadn't done a good job of doing that. Okay, number 6. Be content because we can trust the Lord. Proverbs 3, 5, and 6 is one of my favorite verses. Trust in the Lord with all your heart. Lean not to your own understanding, but in all your ways acknowledge Him, and He will direct your paths. I'm so looking forward to this next section of studies that we'll have next week, verses 7 through 17. We may even complete the chapter next week and then be ready to start reviewing, okay? Thank you for your kind attention today. Mm-hmm.